And welcome to the June 5th regular meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees. The board met in closed session and discussed public employee evaluation, performance evaluation, the superintendent. We discussed negotiations with unrepresented employees, the assistant superintendents of business services and the assistant superintendent of educational services and the superintendent. We discussed status of non-classified employees in the adult school. And we also talked to a student personnel issue. The purpose of this is that I will have to abstain from that, and I will not only have to abstain from the vote, but I'm also going to need to abstain from the discussion. In my abstention, I will be leaving the meeting, and so we felt it would be better for this item to be at the end so that I wouldn't have to leave and then come back.
I appreciate that reason, and I guess I just wonder if there's anyone here on that item who that's going to inconvenience, but I think that's a good plan you have.
Okay. Seeing no other problems on the consensus on the order of business, Mr. Robinette, I believe we'll go ahead and we'll do the acknowledgement of retiring employees. Sure.
Tonight it's our pleasure to honor those individuals who are leaving the school district for new chapters in their personal and professional lives. For me, it's always a bittersweet time since I have known and worked alongside many of these fine professionals. Our list this year includes 21 retirees, and many of whom have already left the district at some place in over the course of the school year and actually living someplace else, several of whom have other commitments keeping them from being here tonight, and some that just plain don't like this sort of public recognition thing and choose not to be here. However, we would really like to take some brief moments to pay tribute to those that are here in our presence tonight. And I've asked the principals to just say a few words about these retirees. And so first of all, I'd like to have Mr. Pete Zotovich come up.
It's my privilege to Pete Zotovich, principal of Morrilby High School, and I'd like at this point in time to just speak a few moments about Mr. King Schofield, who is retiring after 12 years in our school district. King has earned all of his degrees from University of Southern California from 1968 to 1975. He has a degree in speech communications, a master's in rhetoric and public address, and most of his teaching experience has been in speech communications and in social studies. He taught at SC and UCLA, which is an interesting combination, during his graduate school years. And we actually, on the campus that I was at, where I was teaching before I came here, Mr. Schofield was actually there helping the speech and debate coach there several times, and I didn't even know he was on campus, but I'm sure we did run into each other. We just didn't know to say hi at that time. King's taught for 32 years, 15 of them at Westlake School for Girls in Los Angeles. And then when Westlake School merged with Harvard, it became Harvard Westlake, and he taught there for additional 5 years. He's been working at Morrilby High School, like I said, for the last 12, and it's been my privilege as the assistant principal and then principal to work with King. We have had our most productive years at our school in both our social studies department and our athletic department in the semifinals. And as he says here, in a very tragic game to Huntington Beach. He spent his professional life as a teacher, coach, and administrator involved in interscholastic competition. He has been a fabulous, fabulous teacher at our school. A few things at Morro Bay. He's been our athletic director for 12 years. He's been on our management team for countless years. He was on our school design schedule team. He has been our social studies department chair for the last several years. He has been on our reconceptualization team. King gets so involved in everything that is very, very, very academic. But on top of that, as I mentioned, he was our athletic director. And there isn't an athletic director that I know that I can speak about that is as accomplished academically as this gentleman. And he has taught honors world history at Morrilby High School for most of those 12 years. His classes are brimming with kids. They love to listen to him, and he loves to listen to them. They have a great time together, and he is going to be unbelievably missed. He's here tonight with his wife, Terry, Ms. Chapman, who works at San Luis High School. King has done just a fabulous job, not only academically, but in our athletic arena. And I just have to take my hat off to him. He is retiring to a small little town in Washington named Squim, where he says he's going to relax for a year and just kind of decide what he wants to do. But I know this gentleman, he won't be relaxing. He'll be calling me up and coaching me from a distance. That's one of the great things about Mr. Schofield is that not only is he a colleague, but he has the ability to come in and really give fabulous, fabulous advice to people and come in and be a real friend and really, really help work with the school program. So this is Mr. Schofield. Has been just an unbelievably active member of our staff and will be sorely, sorely missed. So I present to you King Schofield.
Mr. Schofield, I don't know if it was your mother who named you King, but I think that was a very prescient decision. Is prescient a word? To realize what a monarch you would be in the teaching profession. And I was visited your class in open house, and I'm just so extremely impressed. So teachers like you are hard to come by, really, and it is a privilege that you've been in this district. I really honor you.
Good evening. I'm Will Jones, principal at San Luis Obispo High School. And before I bring up our two retirees tonight, this is getting to be a kind of a bittersweet time of the year. This is, I think, retirees 7, 8, 9, and 10 in the last 3 years. So while we wish all of these great teachers farewell and wonderful futures in retirement, it's becoming a difficult task every year to have to say goodbye to all these wonderful people. Having said that, I'd like to invite Bruce Smith and Greg Betancourt to come up to the lectern. San Luis Obispo High School for 37 years, starting in September of 1970. I was in diapers. Greg taught English before becoming a counselor and has been with the district for 33 years, preceded by 3 years teaching in Los Angeles. That means, ladies and gentlemen, 73 years of dedicated service to education just between these two gentlemen. Both Bruce and Greg can be characterized by their vigor and creativity. Bruce is responsible for creating, as far as I know, the only high school weather station, one that is used regularly in the science classes, and I was taking a look at it today when I was down in his room. He coached cross country from 1970 to 1994. I think that was before it was actually a sport, 1970.
Chasing dinosaurs.
And he coached track from 1971 to 1982, and he's been coaching boys volleyball for the last 6 years since 2002. Greg was a co-founder of the 24-Hour Relay Challenge, and he also started the Student Assistance Program at San Luis Obispo High School. That's a program that is now in place throughout the district. Missing tonight are Gary Lamprecht and Martha Garcia, two other retirees. Gary had 33 years in the district, and he's busy auditioning singers for his new Central Coast Youth Choir. What a surprise. Gary is someplace with kids teaching them how to sing. Shocking. Martha, 25 years in teaching, 21 in the district, was not able to be here with us tonight, one of our Spanish teachers. Total all the numbers, and you have 128 years of service to the youth of San Luis Obispo. If a village is judged by the collective wisdom, compassion and dedication of its elders, then ours is a model village due to the combined efforts of Bruce, Greg, Gary, and Martha. Please join me in thanking Bruce and Greg for the amazing service they have given to the San Luis Obispo High School community. They are good men who will be dearly missed.
Speech?
Much too.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Hi, this is Joyce Hunter, principal at Sinsheimer Elementary School, and to my right I have Janie Holland, who is just an incredible and awesome teacher who's going to be leaving our community, and I guess that's how I want to address my thoughts on Janie this evening. It's just been a real honor and a pleasure to work with her every minute of every day, and when I think about retirement and I hear what some of our other colleagues have shared, it's really about community. And it's about family, because that's what I think of with retirement. It's part of our family and community is leaving us. And I want to honor Janie with that and have you think about a couple things. When you think of excellence yourself, do you think of high professional standards and ideals? Do you think of cutting edge concepts and practices? And that sparked her passion for teaching. And I think it's important to talk a little bit about someone's life and career here. She went back to college in her 30s as her children began to go to school and become more independent. And with that spark and passion for teaching, she attacked school. And she promised herself that she would continue teaching for about 20 more years. That was her goal. She wanted to do the thing that she loved best, which was teaching students. She taught at Teach School and did her student teaching there with Betty Zellers, and Dr. Susie McBride was her supervisor from Cal Poly. So those are all the connections that you see in the community that begin to build. She was and continues to be a real natural teacher. Lucy Amar quickly snatched her up, and her first job was in 1987 there, but San Luis Coastal really, really wanted her back, and I know Dr. McBride really worked hard and said, you've got to get back here. You're much too good. We want you right here in this district. And Jim Miller hired her for Sinsheimer in 1988, where she's remained teaching first grade, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth grade. She really loves being an upper grade teacher, I know. And somewhere she snuck in there, a 4-5 combination teacher. She is a consummate professional, a real superstar teacher. We will miss her so much. Her beliefs in teaching have never changed in her 20 years of service to students. She believes that you should love children like they're your own. She believes that you need to teach with dignity, and you need to do that with every child in your classroom. And she believes that you need to teach each and every day as if every child's parents are in the back of your classroom watching you. Janie, you have made such a difference in the lives of every student that you have ever taught. It is just a pleasure and an honor to have worked with you. I want to talk a little bit about family and community. Janie will be incredibly missed by our Sinsheimer community, but maybe for more than you might realize. It's not often that you have mother, Janie Holland, teaching fourth grade, daughter, Deanie Greenelsh, teaching sixth grade, grandchild, Nathaniel Greenelsh, in fourth grade in Janie's classroom, grandson, Landon Greenelsh, in first grade, and grandfather, Bob Savrick, who's our evening custodian, all at the same school. Our family will miss her. And it is truly a community. So tonight, we say aloha to Janie. I just have a couple comments left to make. We know that Janie is leaving us and leaving our family at Sinsheimer to spend time with her husband, VL, who's right behind me here, her family and friends. But we know that aloha doesn't mean goodbye, does it? It really means that we love you, and we know we will see you again and often. All right. You go ahead. Whatever you want to say.
I just wanted to say briefly, it seems like just yesterday that I interviewed with San Luis Coastal and had to teach a lesson.
How do you follow up a hi, Nana? Good evening. Steve Anderson, principal at Laguna Middle School. One thing as a gentleman, I don't want to sit here and talk about age, length. So I would like to take a moment, and I wanted to address Julie. Let me wish you the happiness in the retirement and thank you for the many contributions you have made to Laguna Middle School and the San Luis Coastal Unified School District. Over the years I've worked with you, it has been an honor and a pleasure to get to know you on both a professional and personal basis. On both counts, I hold you in high esteem. Indeed, you are not only a caring human being, but a professional educator considered by peers and parents as an outstanding educator and child advocate. Your guidance has affected students throughout the county as students move through the high schools, community college, and Cal Poly. The approach you have demonstrated to your students is one of caring and professionalism. I know the staff and students at Laguna will miss you. You have left behind a fine program, especially the unique opportunities you presented to the students and the high expectations you calmly held before them. It is my sincere hope that your retirement years will bring you joy and fulfillment. Best wishes, and don't forget to visit.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen of the board. I'm Don Schellenberger, principal at Del Mar, and it's my great honor tonight to say goodbye to two of the most wonderful teachers in our district, and that's Connie Classing and Kate Bauer. If they could come up and join me, please. Connie, over here on far right, Kate, close right. Connie came to the district, I think, about 20 years ago, and prior to that she was in Los Angeles for about 5 years, and she spent a lot of time trying to convince everybody that kindergarten was the only place for her. And it was hard because the principals that I talked to that were her principals prior to me being the fortunate principal said, you know, I tried to get her to teach other grades because she was so good. And I just wanted to have her follow her kids all the way up through sixth grade. And but Connie landed in kindergarten, and she loved that grade. And she's done a fantastic job there. And some of the things that I asked the teachers to give me some input, who the teachers that had worked with her for a long time, and they said that she was an outstanding role model. He has a perfect sense of what is developmentally appropriate for the little students, and has extremely high expectations. As a colleague, she is professional, a team player, she's friendly and fun, and always searching for ways to improve our programs. As a master teacher, she has helped to ensure that future teachers have valuable input and experience. And as a mentor in San Luis Coastal, she began a program called the Little Book, or the Take-Home Reading Books, which has become a system in our kindergarten. And by the end of the year, all of our kindergarten kids are reading. I mean, they're actually reading, and not only at a very primer level, but at a competent level. And she has been kind of the constructor of that program. Are other kindergarten teachers feel like they're losing a friend and a family member? They feel like she is just part of this triumvirate that has ruled kindergarten for 20 years, and we're really going to miss her because she was so much a part of the planning in that program and raised it to a level that was far above the bar of anything that those teachers were used to, and I think she's been an example for other teachers in our district too. I'd also like to mention that there's a very special thing about Mrs. Glassing, and that's the ING in her last name. And the kids in the first grade and the second grade, when they go up and they're practicing their phonics and they're learning to read, that's always the chunk, the ING. It's the ing, and it's up there on the alphabet chart, and it shows. So whenever those kids come across a word, they go, ing, ing, ing. Oh, yeah, just like Mrs. Glassing. And so they know how to spell those words. And Connie was also trained in reading recovery, and she went on a long road trip with her husband, and it was a great trip. I probably shouldn't say this, but I think Connie couldn't wait to get back. And when she got back, she jumped right back in again and is still doing reading recovery. And she's just a really wonderful person, and we love having her back. And I hope she'll stick around for many years to do this. So for the lady that laughs a lot and the ing, we hope that we never lose you. So thank you so much for being part of our school. And Mrs. Bauer, I can say anything about her, and she'll probably laugh, because she has the greatest sense of humor, and she loves history, and because she is so literate, and with her knowledge of history, she's able to connect that to the literature that she teaches. And I was just in her room the other day, and she has a student teacher now, and boy, she runs that teacher ragged. And she makes sure that those kids see the connection between literature and history. And what greater gift to create meaning. And she has a husband that's really a funny guy, too. And together they make a great team. And, Kate, I want to thank you for training all the student teachers that you've taught. And because every one of it must be really hard to hang it up and walk away. But the one thing that you have to go away with is that to know that you did make a difference, that you mattered, and that you gave a gift, not only knowledge to your students, but you created the spark and the thirst for knowledge. And you both symbolize all that is best about being a teacher. So thank you very much.
Would you come join me? Med Valentine, Superintendent of San Luis Coastal. I don't know how best to summarize a career in 2 minutes, let alone all I feel about a person that I respect and admire. I reflected upon 10 years of conversations I've had with and about Don Schallenberger. And some significant memories came forward. I remember when the validation team for the California Distinguished School recognition asked me what we did to make Del Mar successful. I told the truth. I told them we get out of Don Schallenberger's way and take notes. I've told the story many times, but it bears repeating here. The purpose of the California Distinguished School validation team is to make sure that the written self-study that the school reports on itself actually reflects the reality of the school when the team physically observes the school. The Del Mar self-study had a perfect score, when the validation team arrived to see if it was true. They wound up before they left in their written report criticizing the self-study. They concluded that Del Mar was even better than they had reported in their perfect score description. Don was the San Luis Coastal Administrator of the Year. His school has gone on to be honored as an NCLB Title I Academic Achievement Award winner. Don himself was honored as the California DARE Officer Administrator of the Year for the state, and the beat goes on. I was talking with another very accomplished principal in our district who summarized his thoughts as, "We're all just trying to catch up with Don." And maybe that's the best way to sum up his career. We're all just trying to catch up with Don. Recognitions are great in that they validate the efforts of so many people. But Don would tell us that far more important than recognitions is what we do for children. I think one of Don's greatest legacies here is that he challenged us to know every kid and how he or she was doing. He challenged to ask ourselves, what are we doing for this child and this child and this child by name?
I would just like to say the best move of my career was to join San Luis Coastal Unified School District. And I was honored the first day, and I'm honored the last day. And when I joined this district, I felt like I was in a solar system where all the planets revolved around in a logical manner, and that there was a purpose. And I've never forgotten that feeling, and I still treasure it today. And I especially want to thank the people that have opened the doors for me to allow me to work with a school and a staff, schools and staffs, that were willing to grow and to improve. And that was my honor, and I treasure it, and I'll take it with me forever. So thank you very much.
Don? Hey, Don? Before you leave, I have to share a recollection. When I first came to work in San Luis Obispo County, I had worked at Templeton Elementary School, and that was before your time. I remember when you were hired there and how excited people were. And then I also remember after you left Templeton, the comment of the staff was that people were crying because they knew they were going to miss you so much. And I just want to tell you that it's now our turn to cry, and we're going to miss you. Thanks.
Wait, Don, one more thing. There's probably not very many elementary students who see a principal retire. But I am a former elementary student of Don Schallenberger's and of Susan Schallenberger. Don taught me in elementary school, I'm not going to say what year, English and yearbook. And Susan was my teacher for art. Don was a fabulous teacher to students, and he's also, as you've witnessed, a fabulous teacher leader. We will all miss him, and I just want you to know, Don, that many elementary and high school students have gone on and furthered their education, and it's because of you that they have made a difference in education, and I got to experience that and witness that in a school reunion, and Don Schallenberger's name came up many times. So thank you from everybody.
I would also like to mention that there are some retirees that are not here tonight, and I'd like to at least mention their names. From Baywood Elementary School, instructional aide Peggy Brown and teacher Jan O'Mara. Also from Morro Bay High School, teacher Fayla Chapman and custodian Bunny Martz. From C.L. Smith, teacher Sandy Fredericks. From Hawthorne Elementary School, teacher Chris Freeman. Also from Slo High, paraeducator Polly Gammons.
from our transportation department, bus driver Richard Lackey, from my own personnel department, our personnel assistant Jan McCarthy, and from
Mrs. Roger here. Mrs. Roger, we need you. Thank you. Okay, let's move on to approval of the minutes, and I will be abstaining from this because I was not at the meeting of May 22nd. Mr. Peter.
I make a motion to approve the minutes from the last meeting as set forth.
It's been moved by Mr. Spadafor and seconded by Mr. Millar. All in favor?
Well, can I have a correction, please?
I'm sorry. Ooh.
On advance agenda, it said the board's consensus was to proceed with its July workshop without using a moderator. I just wanted to note that I made a motion that we have John as the moderator, and I think Marilyn seconded it, didn't you?
No.
But our president... Oh, it's going to be discussed tonight. Okay. I was just saying that since our president pro tem was so modest, he didn't bring it to a vote.
Okay.
Chris?
Yes, sir.
If I could just make a mild correction. I was fortunate enough to attend at Morbay High School the academic awards program, not the athletic. And I was in the company of Marilyn Rogers, our other board member. And I think that should be there in the minutes.
Okay. Mrs. Holmes? So do you approve the corrections?
No, I'll amend the motion to include those changes.
Mr. Millar, you okay with that?
I'll second.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded to amend the minutes. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Aye. Carries 5-0 with 2 abstentions. Okay. Let's move on then. Correspondence. The board, I believe the board received 2 pieces of correspondence. I did anyway. One was from Wes Kruko, and Wes is the historian of the San Luis High School FFA. And Wes sent us a nice letter and a magazine, I guess a national FFA magazine, which featured San Luis Obispo High School. That's very exciting. So thanks to Wes. And then also, I don't know about other board members, but I received from the San Luis Coastal Teachers Association information on school site councils. So I wanted to thank them for that. Let's move on then to public comment. We have 3 requests to speak. Yes, sir. Oh, I didn't receive that. Okay. Okay, and thank you. So we received correspondence from AVAC, the Avila, yes, find that. The Avila Valley Advisory Council. Regarding the proposed development, I believe, of the old school. So they're announcing, they're just stating that they had a meeting where they were provided information about the revised plan. So thank you very much. Anything else that I missed?
Education far and above beyond its the pay scale. But what I want to talk about is the possibilities of developing a permanent landscape kind of for the San Luis Coastal Schools. Because right now, a lot of the Monterey pines and eucalyptus trees that were planted in the past, for instance, at Laguna Junior High School, are simply dying. And they're very dangerous trees that probably have to be a lot of money be paid to remove them. And what we've been doing in the last 15 years is growing a variety of native or appropriate trees and giving them away. They're planted at Lopez County Park. They're planted, you mentioned Avila Valley. The Bellevue Santa Fe Charter School planted about 125 oaks and redwoods around the perimeter of their school this year. The students did, and some of the parents participated. We donated the drip along with, we didn't. We facilitated it. Jim Brabeck from Farm Supply donated the drip, and it was all put in. The kids got out there with the parents and put the trees in, and they'll be there for a long time. And they'll replace the Monterey pines, which are just, well, they've had to cut down several of them. It had all Monterey pines at one time. And so that's the issue. Maybe we can be put on the agenda for next month or something, and we can come back with a more hard and fast plan. But we have trees growing at the growing grounds out here at Cal Poly and at Morro Bay High School. We have redwoods. We have oaks. We have a whole variety of native trees. And this is an issue that's really, its time has come with global warming and with habitat depletion. Caltrans is now planting sycamores, redwoods, oaks along Highway 101 there at the foot of Cerro San Luis and through Arroyo Grande. And they're doing it because the eucalyptus trees are simply dying. And so we're either going to have no trees at all or we're going to have a different type of landscaping in the future. So that's what we're up to. We're offering to give you the trees you need and help you design and even implement the landscaping. I've got a long relationship with the CCC at Camp San Luis. And this year we planted about over 200 trees at the Cal Poly campus around the sports complex. So,
well, thank you. My suggestion is that you talk to Mr. Parker, and then Mr. Parker, if the board would have an interest in it, can bring it back to the board. But I would invite you to talk to him, and then he can coordinate that with the schools for you.
Which one is Mr. Parker?
Mr. Parker is next to Mr. Zotovich there with the glasses and the goatee. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah. And I also remember Mike Francis was my dive instructor here. Mr. Francis was the Seahawks swimming coach for so many years, and he retired. And it's almost like you think you can't replace these people, but the younger people like Brianna and Joseph over here, they do come along and they do eventually replace them. So thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Okay. Next we have Jamie Lewis with the San Luis Symphony.
Thank you, members of the board, for letting us speak tonight. I'm with the San Luis Obispo Symphony. I work with kids and parents and teachers and do a lot of music education, which it's my honor and privilege. I've seen other districts disperse the monies very piecemeal, which is exactly how it's been for the past 30 years, where each individual school does its own thing. So I really do want to commend the work of Dr. Matakovich and everybody on the committee, and thank you for inviting us as a community member to take part. I also want to urge the board to consider using part of what the California Alliance for Arts Education and the California Department of Education had originally envisioned when they put together our VAPA process, which we now use. And that is the Mapping the Arts Toolkit, which we use, the Continuum, which is helping us assess where we are in our process, and lastly, using what they call a coach in every corner, which is an outside independent person that comes in and brings together very disparate groups of people, community members that are very impassioned, teachers who are very impassioned, parents who are very impassioned, all talking about the arts, which is somewhat of a volatile subject these days, bringing them together, creating a sense of community and also keeping things from being fragmented and putting together a consistent delivery of arts education. So I would urge you to look at that. It's something that has been successful in over 40 school districts across California in bringing a plan into place that is doable and that everyone agrees upon. So thank you for listening to me, and thanks.
Thank you, Jamie. And next we have Sandy Sigurdsson. Sandy?
Good cop. thank you very much for letting us speak and letting us speak at the top. And I want to tag on to what Jamie said, and that we feel so committed to the process that the school district's embarked on and the coach in every corner. We've gotten a couple of bids, which are easy to get from them, ranging from $10,000 to $15,000 for, I think, 40 weeks of coaching. I can assure you that I can't speak for my colleagues, but the symphony would help pay for it. I want you to know that. I think we were at this meeting last year. And we saw the retiring teachers. And for me, who has, I've had three children go through San Luis Coastal, it was particularly bittersweet to see some of the most, the folks that have guided our family and our kids. And I just applaud you for hiring such wonderful folks. And like Lionel said, I don't know how we replace them, but somehow really great folks come along too. So thank you. I saw a lot of you at VAPA meetings over the past year, 14 months or so that we met, and I thank you for your time. Walt Millar was at the final meeting, and God bless him, I was saying stuff about, you know, he's talking about balance and budget, and you know, at VAPA, and we just don't have to think about that. We don't have to think and weigh everything that you have to think about and weigh. We're here to be advocates for the arts, specifically for instrument instruction in the schools. And so the recommendations that have come forth from VAPA, great start. I really think we're going to be heading somewhere in terms of this systematic approach. Not okay that K-6 doesn't have instrument instruction in the going towards that best practices school that we're trying to create, the school district that we're trying to create. Thanks for giving us a chance to do some big thinking. I hope you get a chance to look at all of those big thinking ideas that were talked about in the VAPA committee. Poor you, we'll be back next year and part of the committee if they'll keep letting us be there. I thank the teachers and the principals who were kind enough to let us be and respectful enough to let us be part of it when so many of the community partners, we were really pretty naive about the culture in the schools and the priorities and the demands that you have on you from the state and from your parents. So we're honored to be part of it. There's a lot of work to do. We'll be watching. And it looks like, from this point of view, it looks like you'll be delivering. And we're grateful for that. So, one last thing. I'm so grateful to see a recommendation for everyday etudes for the materials. I lament that the live portion of that is not recommended for funding. I sincerely lament it. I think I said last time, you know, we need to teach our kids that music doesn't come out of a box. It's created by a person like them. And I think you need that sequential element of live performance to tie it together for kids. But I'm certainly grateful for the recommendation on the materials, and I'll hope that you get a chance to talk about whether or not you can stretch just a little and include that live performance element. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Sandy. Yes, please.
I just wanted to say that one of the great things about this committee, and I really credit Dr. Matakovich and the community groups who are involved, one of the things I tell parents frequently is one of the ways to have more art in your student's life is to support and attend the events of things like Youth Symphony, the Symphony, San Luis Obispo Little Theater, the SLO Film Festival. We have many nonprofits that are providing the arts. Oh, lest I forget, the Arts, San Luis Obispo County Arts Council, Arts Obispo, one of my favorites. They're wonderful community organizations that need your support, but more importantly, from the standpoint of your student's life, they provide many of the enriching experiences that you would like us to see include in the school day, which we would love to do. And in the meantime, it's out there for you to take your student to and involve your student in. And I just always like to point that out because we have some wonderful nonprofits represented by the two women who just spoke to us tonight.
Thank you.
Thanks to all of you for your work on it.
Mrs. Dickinson?
I know this isn't the time to discuss this yet, but I just wanted to say I've been a person all along interested in instrumental music during the school day, grades 4 through 6. And I hope that is on our tier 1 next year. I would love to see that. And I liked your idea about a person like you creates music to students because music is so important in our culture. My students listen to music all the time, but we're kind of losing as a culture the idea of creating music and making music. It's such an important element of being a human being.
Great. Okay. Let's move on then to reports by school staff and student representatives. And Brianna, are you ready to go for it?
No.
All right. Is this your last one?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
So is the 9th grade new student meetings.
We have our Tiny Tiger, which is our preschool graduation, on Thursday at 10:15. Everyone graduates because they'll get upset if they don't get a hat, but not all of them are leaving. This Friday is our senior picnic at 8 a.m. at Cuesta Park, and I'm really excited about that. We get to sign yearbooks and hang out and stuff. Sunday is the spring choral concert at 3 p.m., and then we start finals week and end it with minimum days and the cap and gown distribution, senior showcase, which should be really, really good, so all of you are invited to it. It's at 5:30 on Thursday in the pack. And we have a lot of talented people, so if you guys want to come, you're invited. And then Friday is commencement, and I will not be coming back, so I'm really excited, but sad at the same time. So it should be good.
What are you going to do next year?
I'm going to UC Davis, and I'm going to be a bio major, and we'll see where it goes from there.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, congratulations.
Yes. Actually, I'm on the cheerleading squad, too. I just tried out.
At UC Davis?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, so I'm really excited.
Well, you'll be down here, I'm sure. I believe they play football against Cal Poly.
They just turned to like Division I, so.
It's a big deal. Mm-hmm. It's going to be hard to see you on the other side, though.
I know. They're talking about it. It's weird. But thank you very much. It's been a wonderful year with all of the board members.
Well, thank you very much, Brianna. And now, Mr. Hur and I. Compose yourself there, Joe.
I just want to start with, I don't want there to be any hard feelings here, but this has to be our last meeting. And it's not you, it's me. But to be completely honest, there's someone else. Her name is the rest of my life, and she's taken a lot of time. So on a serious note, though, this is my last meeting, and I'm sad to say that I won't see all your smiling faces again. Today was our yearbook distribution at lunch. Beautiful yearbook put together by the yearbook staff, or class, rather. Tomorrow, our graduation packet and contract is due back, and that is the contract that basically says you can't go naked under your gown at graduation, which is really disappointing for me. I had big plans, but I guess if you want to participate.
I'm going to tell you, it's not disappointing for those of you who will be shaking your hand.
Don't fool yourself. Thursday is a regular day for most of the school, but the seniors have finals 0, 6, and 7. Friday is senior finals 0, 3, and 7 as well. On Saturday at 5 p.m. in our cafeteria is our sports banquet, so if you have athletes close to your heart, we invite you to come. On Monday, we pick up our senior clearance card, which is the you have to have every teacher sign this before you can leave and pay all our debts and turn in all our books and all that kind of stuff. As well, the seniors have finals 0, 2, and 4 on that day. The next day, all students it begins our minimum days, and all students have final exams, periods 1 and 5. We have to turn in our clearance cards, seniors do, and caps and gowns are handed out. Additionally, on Thursday, we have grad night, which is at Boomers, and that should be a lot of fun. We're not coming back until 5 a.m., so. And, looking forward to graduating. Graduation is on Thursday at 4:30. Your seats will be open at 4:30. I believe the ceremony starts at 6:30. So if you want a seat, 4:30 is the time to come. And we invite all you to come out.
And ours is on Friday and it begins at 4:30. So all of you are also invited. And I would come early for a seat too. Blankets are out by 9 on the bleachers. So.
Where are you going? I'm going to Cal Poly next year. And I'll be studying forestry and natural resources.
So, Walter, no illegal campfires when Joe's a forest ranger.
I might be able to let it slide.
Joe, I have a question. Next Tuesday night, am I confused? It's the Senior Academic Awards?
It's the Senior Tribute Awards, and that's where they announce scholarships and those kind of things, like blue cord or silver cord or those type of things.
Okay, and I thought it was 6 o'clock. What time did you say?
Well, it starts at 6, but they're asking people to start coming at 5:30.
Okay, and...
I guess. Am I wrong?
Mr. Zotovich?
Okay.
6 o'clock. Okay, and I was told new gym, and you said cafeteria.
New gym is, I'm being told now, we have a bulletin coming in that new gym.
Okay. I just want to make sure I show up at the right place.
Thank you, Ms.
At
Roger.
The right time. Thank you.
In my last meeting, I start falling apart.
It has been really a pleasure to have both of you. Two really bright young people, and I know my fellow board members join me in wishing you the very best.
And as always, you can choose to stay or you can go. And thanks again to both of you on behalf of the board and really just on behalf of the community, because we think it's important to have student board members, and we respect your opinions and we respect your discussions that you've had with us. So thank you very much. And Joe, don't count on that graduation. Let's move on then. Are there any staff members that have anything to add this right now? Okay. Seeing no one, then we'll go on to Mr. Miller with the status of the state budget.
Thank you, Mr. President. Two essential issues going on in Sacramento at this time. First and foremost is the budget conferences have started between the governor and the legislators, both the Assembly and the Senate. They are starting their conferences. CSBA and all of the other educational coalition members have very strong positions on three essential issues. One is to fund the base, the Prop 98 base. We would ask that the governor and the legislature, and so far we're getting support for funding the base, which means 100% funding for all education. Legislature support us. The governor hasn't yet swung around and shown any support for that issue. We also would ask that they fund the hourly program, specifically their summer school, the hourly programs related to underperforming kids, the CASI. What we have been performing are various after school and during the school day intervention programs for underperforming kids for which we're supposed to be reimbursed. And at this moment, one of the programs is going to be deficited by 30%, one program by about 22%, and the other two programs would be in the single digits for deficiting. But ultimately, it puts every school district in the state of California in a negative position on a program that was supposed to be funded by the state. And so we look for them to keep their promise and fund that program. There is also an issue that is has arisen in the last 2 weeks that's related to the VAPA program, and I think that it's important for us to realize this, that the Department of Finance has established two bills in the state legislature which rewrites the rules on how VAPA money is spent and governed, how that program is to be established and utilized. Right now, the program has a district-wide oversight to it, and what the Department of Finance would like to see, and for which it's a 50-50 call right now whether they'll be successful, is to provide the money directly to school sites for individual school site council oversight and decision-making about how that money's to be spent. What it would do is to take the work that Mary's committee and the community have put countless hours into crafting, puts it in serious jeopardy, and begins to make it a school site council issue. I'll be going to Sacramento on Thursday for a meeting of the CASBO legislative advocates to find out what kind of position we need to take on that. And so far with the emails that I've seen flying amongst the school districts, is it is a very contentious issue in terms of school districts would like to see the ability to have an all-inclusive program rather than a divided, chopped-up kind of program for school sites. So, in fact, there are probably not any school districts that have been engaged in the process that don't have a program already established with countless hours put into its forethought and design. So it's going to be a very contentious issue if it gains any legs in the legislature. And there is some speculation that LA Unified and Fresno have very deep interest in having a school site-based program. So we'll see how that divides itself and comes forth. I'll let you know at our next board meeting after I return from Sacramento. I think that's about it. Those are the two big issues. John.
Was there another piece? I thought you mentioned there were two pieces of legislation that the Finance Committee had.
No, there are two bills that they've introduced to address this issue. Yeah, this one issue.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
Let's move on then to item. Sure.
Do you think that would be it?
Number three, approval Medi-Cal administrative activities update, and Cynthia Ravlin.
We're going to team up. Thank you. And please strike approval. It's the Medi-Cal administrative activities update per your request. And we'll give Cynthia a moment to set up. What you will see tonight is two overheads. The first one is the MA, which is the Medi-Cal administrative update snapshot, and it is not in your hand. It is not in your packet. Cynthia, can we maybe make that bigger? In 2003-2004, there were two quarters that we invoiced, which brought in $212,000 after the fees for our two contracts. We received $195,000. It was at that time when we requested that we ask the board to have the MA clerk or the secretary clerk help to support the MA activities. And I believe that's when Russell Miller expected or predicted that 2004-2005 would bring in about $400,000. And he was pretty close. I was surprised personally. So the first year of four quarters of invoicing, and that is the actual time trackers that we turn in, the hours that are surveyed given a week. And we invoiced $456,000, and after the fees, we received $420,000. For 05-06, we have completed all of those surveys and turned them in, but MBT, who processes it to Kern County, who then processes it to the state, has only submitted three quarters, and we have received $85,000. Only one quarter we've received funds in. It goes back in arrears, as you can see. So for this year, 2006-2007, we have completed all four quarters of our MA surveys. MBT has not processed that yet to Kern County. We can estimate what our income will be given averages over the last couple of years. But in a snapshot, the very bottom line grand total received here in our district is $701,000. Our next slide, and we can clap
Jackie,
for all
can
that.
Ask you a question
yes,
before
please
we
do.
Go to the next slide, please.
Yes.
When you go to a grand total, what period of time does that reference?
Two quarters of 2003-2004, four quarters worth of 2004-2005, and three quarters of 2005-2006.
Okay, and then we don't know yet what the amount will be that's received after the expenses are taken out. The
correct.
One quarter that's been received for 2005-2006?
$85,000,
yeah,
yes.
That's 15% lower than the average.
It's important to look at the invoice total and then the amounts received. In this process, we've invoiced almost $1 million in those nine quarters.
$988,000.
And it's $988,000. Out of that, We've paid three essential parts to other outside contractors. One's the MBT, which is the people who fill out and file the claims for us. The other is the Kern County County Office of Education, who has kind of a lock on this process in terms of we go through them, they extract fees out of that. And then finally, we have the clerk sub and clerk that the board allocated us to utilize in order to maximize our claims. And the net that the district has received is $701,000. So nine quarters, $1 million, and we're averaging about $110,000 a quarter in net fees.
And let me just ask you a quick question about, sorry, Adrian, I kind of want to follow on. And prior to the 2003-2004, those two quarters in that year, were there MA reimbursable funds out there in the world?
Yes, there were.
And how much of those were we receiving? And I raise that because I want to commend the administration for bringing this forward to us. And it's easy when a school district is doing relatively well financially to stop looking aggressively. And I think it's not only an example of looking aggressively to bring this program forward, but the way it's been implemented by our district and by our district employees has been really inspirational. And I think everybody sees the value and everybody's gotten on board, and we've made the process better, and I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Just for new board members and people that are watching, do you want to just briefly say what kinds of things we bill for? And I also wanted to mention, like Walter's saying, that we do thank the people, because it's kind of a tedious and time-consuming task.
Yes.
And a lot of it gets taken out, you know, with those kind of overhead expenses. So just to commend them for that, because I recognize that. But if you want to review real quickly what it is.
Real quickly, yeah. The MA is a snapshot in time 4 weeks out of the school year. And it is a snapshot in time of trained participants who help to generate Medi-Cal and Healthy Kids insurance to students and families. So that snapshot in time, they ask themselves for those 8 hours a day for 5 days, what am I doing right now to help connect students and families to health insurance, vision services, other agency services? And then they average that, the hours, over time. And that is how that is generated. So it's things that... The Department of Health Services.
Jackie, I'm...
Yes.
I might as well get it, all of us at once. I'm noticing that we went from 55 participants to 70 participants. I'm wondering if you see a potential for more participants, and if so, how are we going about trying to gather those?
Its intention is, and that is to connect the families with the insurance. On the next slide, it gives you a snapshot of some of the items. This is unrestricted funds, and so the school sites are provided dollars to spend in connecting students with their education, and some of the MA dollars at work, and this is just a few of the items. For those of you who can't see it that far, it's digital cameras, reading and math supplies, 5-member team to Avid Institute, external DVDs, software upgrades, various conferences, additional hours for clerical staff in the attendance, counseling, and athletic departments, camera for yearbook production, a curriculum or supplemental professional development tool, teaching for deep comprehension, medical supplies, various substitutes, instructional materials and supplies, curricular workbooks and dictionaries, field trip transportation, and transportation for student competition. And as sites become more familiar with their needs and the various plans that they have, they'll be able to utilize that unrestricted funds throughout the years.
Jackie, I think you partially answered my question, but these uses for these dollars are determined by the sites based on their school improvement plans and things they need to do?
School site plans, yes. Thank you.
One of the things we do is, as Adrian brought up, we recognize how much of an effort this takes from each school site during those four snapshots in time to produce the revenues they do. So we share back the revenues to the school sites. They use the money in their school site plan to buy those types of additional supplies.
Great. Let's move on then to item number four, which is a public hearing. It's a proposed agreement with the California School Employees Association, chapter number 89. Mr. Robinette.
Yeah, we reached agreement with California School Employees Association, chapter 89, and a successor agreement. It's included in the action consent item, and we had a very nice negotiating season, and thanks to Mrs. Dickinson for joining the team, and we have an opportunity for a public hearing should anyone from the public choose to comment.
Great. Then I'll go ahead and open this public hearing on the proposed agreement with California School Employees Association, chapter number 89. Is there anyone from the public who would like to address the board during this public hearing? Seeing no one, I'll close the public hearing. Move on to item number five. This is a public hearing on the proposed 2007-2008 budget adoption. Mr. Miller.
The board is presented for review and discussion of the proposed budget for the fiscal year 2007-08. And at this time, we have a required public hearing to allow for community input prior to the board discussion action later in this meeting.
Great. And I will open the public hearing on the proposed 2007-2008 budget adoption. Is there any member from the public who would like to address the board during this public
programs in mathematics and literacy? Board members were interested in considering another way of looking at that objective.
Okay. And this is an action discussion item. Is there anybody that would like to have some discussion on this? And the proposed language, as it says, might read, to develop a fully integrated standards-based visual and performing arts program for K-12. The current VAPA standard reads right now, to develop a delivery system for standards-based visual and performing arts instruction which complements our efforts to raise student literacy and mathematics performance. Do we have any comments from board members about this? Mr. Spadafore?
Thank you. One of the reasons, or one of several reasons, that this was raised is to explore with the availability of additional funds the vision of incorporating a visual and performing arts curriculum that will not disappear in the future if funding changes, which it almost certainly will, and that becomes part of the curriculum in a way that students will be able to receive sequential and fully integrated visual and performing arts with the core curriculum, which this is a part of as standards-based, and that we can, as a district and as a board, explore the future of having something that will not be denigrated or lost because of funding issues as it has over the last 35 years. So I had asked that this be considered as a direction or a vision of the board so we can explore ways to make something a part of the student's future that will not be so fragile as to be lost or reduced or to even disappear because of funding issues as it has in the past.
Mrs. Dickinson?
I fully support this change. And I want to reference the mission statement, the second sentence. The district guarantees to provide the highest quality programs and services which will give all individuals the opportunity to realize their full intellectual, physical, creative, emotional, and social potential, which has to include visual and performing arts and music, and also our very own district goals. The first one is student achievement and well-being. to provide for each student a safe school that, number one, knows who that student is, number two, cares about the student, number three, continues to clarify what is important for that student to know and be able to do. And it goes on, refining instructional practices. But our district wants our students to know more than a math and English. And I think it makes it very clear in this way that we do expect a well-rounded and quality education in the fullest sense.
Okay.
Math or literacy objective. This objective was sort of crafted in order to demonstrate that the mathematics and literacy objectives were to be complemented by the VAPA program. If it is the board's wish to clarify that objective, that a visual and performing arts that's fully integrated and sequential be an objective that exists side by side with the mathematics and is co-equal with it, then we would seek direction to change the objective.
We've heard from two board members. Mr. Buckman?
My concern is that as we've seen over the past 10 and even 20 years, the funding for VAPA continues to be a roller coaster. And my other concern is that as we work with the strategic plan, we've put a lot of effort into working with it, and it's this statement has been what's been guiding us. And what happens then? Do we each come back and change other statements as we see fit, or do we work on it as a strategic plan and get through it?
Dr. Valentine, do you have any comments about that, or how something like this might relate to the strategic plan that we've already approved, that we have been going forward on?
Yeah, the objectives that you're looking at, again, I would emphasize, are not board-approved directions, but rather administratively crafted objectives to kind of capture the direction of staff activity as we go through the strategic plan. I think it's appropriate if the board does not believe the objective captured the direction that it would like to go in, that it provides staff with direction to do something else.
Are the objectives that, Dr. Valentine, you're referring to the ones in the paragraph that starts, the intent of the original objective was, and then enumeration of those two objectives there?
Yes, those are the administrative objectives.
Okay, good. Thank you. And could I just follow up on that a little bit? I think the next item, we're going to discuss funding for VAPA, and at least some of the funding that's currently on the table is restricted to supplementing ongoing programs. How does coming up with a fully integrated plan affect those kinds of funding arrangements?
Ideally, it wouldn't. And that's certainly what our hope is. I think the issue that Mr. Spadafor brings forward, though, is a good one, and that is that VAPA funds are historically unstable, and in the event they go away, then what would be the board's direction about VAPA?
Yeah, and I guess that resonates with me, having been an old hand on Strategy 14 many years ago, which was basically at a different time in our district where we were trying to figure out, okay, which programs do we shut down, which lights do we turn off, and which buildings do we lock up? So, you know, we've been very fortunate for a number of years, and I expect that's going to continue. But I think I have some of the same misgivings that Mr. Buckman does. When we developed the statement that it currently reads in the strategic plan, I don't think the discussion anticipated a potential.
It allows a board to take in a broader vision than the funding that exists in one particular year. When an opportunity arises like it has with additional funding coming from the state that hasn't been available before, and B, we've had other issues that touch upon the wording that's considered here. The other issues involve academic freedom for instructors in the classroom to be able to teach in a much richer way. It also brings into perspective the idea that
by saying funding for visual performing arts will no longer exist and therefore we can't plan for it being here for very long is the reason to consider something like this. I think that funding issues are broader than just how much money is available for a block grant in one given year when you may have 8 programs only payable and then you may only have 6 programs or 4 programs at the end of the day. I think we have X number of dollars that we spend for our students, and I think this district does a wonderful job in spending that money. That money that can be spent can be utilized in a broader vision if we believe as a board that visual and performing arts add something to a student's experience here in our district that may encourage and also allow them to do better at these other subjects. I think that's what we're looking at. We're looking at a vision. We're not looking at spending dollars tonight that may have to be cut next year. We're saying as a school board, we believe that we can make a richer environment for a student because we want to look at this year, next year, and within the next 5 to 10 years. It's not committing us to spend any money. It's saying that we believe these aspects of a student's education are as important as learning the other things that are being taught. And by saying it isn't something that can be integrated and become sequential, we're saying that it has a secondary position that as soon as block funding or limited one-time funding goes away, that it no longer will be present. And I think if we can provide something that's integrated, then it doesn't become something that will be gone when funding changes. What it will become is part of the school curriculum that will be there whether funding is available this year or less next year or the year after, because we will always be teaching the students what that curriculum shows. Visual performing arts is standard-based. Teachers with professional development and programs that Dr. Matakovich has been looking at and working can be part, but I think the vision part can be there as a bigger picture, not necessarily tied to funding at this point.
Maybe I shouldn't say anything after that inspiring speech. I agree with that. I was just looking at our 2006 and 7 implementation objectives for the strategic plan, and those are, you know, what we had for this year, and they have some interventions and are real specific to literacy mostly and a lot with English language learning. But that doesn't mean that every year we're going to need this exact same set of objectives to close achievement gaps, and we've already talked about how closing achievement gaps doesn't just mean...
We think about the strategic plan that, you know, we have a lot of items that are listed on there that we could say are directly related to helping a student improve their test scores in literacy or math, but sometimes it's some of the things that a student might benefit from within a broader VAPA program that might also help them improve their performance within the school, and I think we need to start thinking about those as part of the overall strategic plan as well.
One of the things that we do in this country and in this state, and unfortunately sometimes in this county, is we adopt a plan. We come forth with reforms, and we put words to it, and then we put effort into it, and we try to move forward with it, and then we turn around and change course before we find the results. And part of my fear is that, and this is mostly kudos to you guys, because I wasn't here when you did the strategic plan, but you have a good strategic plan, and I hate to see us start taking it apart piecemeal. And if we're going to look at the strategic plan, I think we need to look at it as a whole, and I think we need to sit down and say what's working and what's not and why, and do it in one whole piece, because the strategic plan is basically there as a whole.
Well, I was able to attend one of the early meetings, and then I attended the meeting last week. And I think what struck me the most about the last meeting, I don't believe there was anybody in the room who was not in favor of a standards-based integrated visual performing arts program. But what I kept hearing from teachers and site administrators was, where are we going to do this? You know, what part of the instructional day are we going to do this? Where's the time for teachers to collaborate and come up with this integrated program? Where's the time for planning? And I'm raising this with this issue, but this is not the first or the last we are going to hear about collaboration and planning time. We are asking our professional staff to provide differentiated learning, and where the rubber meets the road is, how do they do that? How did they get together, collaborate on individual student achievement? How do they figure out planning time for integration of curriculum, which is, you know, for a non-educating guy like me, is a complicated issue. So I guess I'm raising this because even though adopting this, and it's almost, you know, it's hard, you're hardly going to find anybody argue against the general principle, has it a wider ripple effect than I think we can appreciate sitting here tonight. And I believe that the better way to address it is through a revision through the strategic planning process. And one of the other issues, and it's kind of a nuts and bolts issue, but it's sort of illustrative. One of the issues that came up is the wheel system, the elective system at Laguna Middle School is actually inhibiting instrumental band because the students have to make these, you know, tough choices about what they're going to do. And instrumental band ends up slipping. That's one of those.
We wouldn't be straying from the strategic plan in any way. To give you an example, I sat in on at the CSBA conference, and perhaps others of you did as well. But there was a school in the state, I wish I could recall what it was, who had developed curriculum that tightly integrated math and music. They faced many of the same challenges that we did in terms of closing the achievement gap of, gap of certain subpopulations of their students. And they had this curriculum that had been developed by some organization that tightly integrated math and music. And they significantly improved their scores by embedding music in their mathematics curriculum. And so I think it's things like that that, in my mind, I'm suggesting we think about integrating into the plan. I don't think in any way that would steer us off course from the strategic plan.
And I think I agree 100%. And what I don't read into the way that the strategic plan is written now is anything that would stop us from doing that. I think all the tools are in place. And after a year of meeting with the community, I think I missed, unfortunately, the last meeting, but I think I missed two of the meetings that have been going on for a year. I don't see anything in just the simple wording that's going to change that and stop us from doing an integrated. And in fact, that's come up over and over again, the concept of integrating it. It does guide us in terms of setting criteria for spending money and for using resources in the district. And that's a different process. And that's the way I see the strategic plan.
Yeah, thank you. And I think there's another important factor to consider here. Two words are used with the present strategic plan, which is complement. And then there's another word that is used, and that's supplement. And those two words are inconsistent with integrated and sequential visual and performing art. And the reason they are is because the instructors who come into the district from outside services don't always provide standards-based curriculum. They also don't have lesson plans that are consistent with the rest of the curriculum. They also change rapidly, and I've been involved in the development of plans by third-party sources, and they've done wonderful work, but it is not integrated and it's not sequential. And I think that my concern is that the goals that the district are setting forth use words which indicate that these are detachable educational experiences that can be removed, whereas we can, as a board, say there is a broader picture. There is a vision. We don't know yet what it will look like. That's why we have people in the administration who do wonderful jobs in terms of integrating curriculum and work with the teachers and other staff people. It is setting a vision for for the district. We don't have to figure out tonight how it will look. We don't have to figure out tonight how what it will cost. But we do have to say, and I believe this is important, to the students of our district, that we believe visual and performing arts should be an integrated, a sequential, standards-based.
You know, I do believe that, that visual and performing arts are an important part of a growth experience, of the growth experience of young people. And I want to support the state standards for those. I have concerns about, as Mr. Buckman spoke to, deviating from the strategic plan, and I know that, John, you don't think that changing the verbiage deviates, but here's my concern, or I have a couple of them. One of them is, unless we are somehow able to give real support to the classroom teachers, we are placing an additional workload on them. I mean, we are going to have to find a way to support fully integrating visual and performing arts, so that it's not perceived by the classroom teacher, who's already really burdened with meeting so many standards, as just more the speed up process. And I fear that if we change to the new verbiage, that if the time ever comes, we will be, given our growing population of English language learners, that if everything has equal weight, will we be choosing between visual and performing arts and literacy? Am I making sense? It's hard for me. I'm going back and forth in my own mind here. Because for me, though I value them and I know that they are a part of what we do and want to do, I have to view literacy as something that is more crucial.
And I will ask that we make these the final comments. We've spent quite a bit of time on this important topic, and we do have quite a bit more to talk about this evening. So with the board's permission, I'd like to try to draw this discussion to a close. Mr. Spatterfor?
Yeah, and my final comment on the point, and I understand the concern is this. I think visual and performing art is literacy. I think visual and performing art is as much literacy for students as math and English. Plus, I think, why not give the teachers and the administrators the opportunity to explore what the possibilities are within this bigger vision? Why not say, look at integration, look at sequential, look at full standards-based programs and see what is possible? That's all we're asking. Is
if the board can be courageous enough to entertain a vision like that.
I'd like to try and bring this to a close by making a motion. I'd like to move that we hold off a decision on this until we have a time to look at it as it affects the entire strategic planning process, and B, until at least after we hear from the VAPA committee that has spent a year trying to grapple with this same issue, and rather than those of us here trying to do it in one evening, at least hear from the committee.
It's been moved and seconded, and I'm going to now, I was going to just say a little bit. I am actually in support of a fully integrated standards-based visual and performing arts curriculum. I do think that this is a too fragmented, and I'm absolutely understanding what Mr. Spadafore is saying. That said, I'm appreciative of what you're saying, Mark, too. And I'm actually going to support your motion, although I really have some very I have some reservations about it. But I would like to amend this because I want this brought back within 2 to 3 months, because I do want to move forward on a fully integrated standards-based visual and performing arts curriculum. I don't want us to be to feel like we're tampering with the strategic plan. However, this first statement does not satisfy me, and I don't think that it's in the best interest of our students. So I would like to hear those things that you're talking about, but I would like this brought back rather quickly, and I'd like to know what the ramifications of this change might be.
And I can second the motion that's being made to modify or to amend your motion to bring that back if you want.
Okay, so what do we have here in terms of the motion? Would you care to restate the amended motion?
What you thought wasn't in the best interest, what statement?
I don't believe this first statement is in the best interest. The first statement to develop a delivery system?
Oh. Yeah. This is the one we have right now.
Correct. Okay. Correct. But I'm appreciative of what Mr. Buckman says. So that said, would you care to, Mrs. Holmes, would you care to tell us what you think you heard?
Do you want this the amended version, or you want Mark's motion?
Why don't we do Mark's motion first and then add the amendments to it, if we can?
Okay. To hold off a decision until we have a time to look at the entire strategic planning process and until we have heard from the VAPA committee.
Okay. And then my amendment, how did you hear my amendment? My request for an amendment.
Well, I would interpret that to mean not an unlimited delay. You want it to return within 2 or 3 months. So that would amend Mark's original statement to hold off a decision for 2 to 3 months.
That's correct. I would like to see this brought back quickly to the board, and I'm wondering if by, say, October.
Well, good evening, Board. It's a pleasure to have an opportunity to share with you a disbursement of state funds for our visual and performing arts program. I'd like to begin by acknowledging the work of our visual and performing arts committee. As you can see on the screen, we have members from the community. I'd like to recognize them. Artists in residence, the San Luis County Arts Council, the Central Coast Center for Arts Education, Children's Creative Project, Moan Art, PTA, Arts in the Classroom, San Luis Arts Center, San Luis Community Foundation, San Luis Obispo Mozart Festival, and the San Luis Obispo Symphony. We were lucky to have board members participate over the course of this year, Mr. Buckman, Mr. Millar, and Mr. Peter. I'm trying to get it to move. I'm sorry. I'm pressing the arrow. I see. Here we go, you guys. All right. Excuse me. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, you guys. We had staff involved in this process. That would be great. We had staff involved in this process, and they represented members of our full school community. Every site had a representative, and I'm happy to say that Joyce Hunter is here tonight as the lone standing representative here at this meeting. She gets extra points, maybe some M&Ms later, Joyce, okay? I'd like to acknowledge the work of this committee. They've taken on a tremendous task, and this task is not a one-year project. It's an ongoing effort. I heard earlier that, you know, we had our final meeting. Well, we had the final meeting for this year, but we're on for next year. So we look at this as an ongoing effort and a commitment that we have in our district. The task centered around an analysis of our visual and performing arts program. We needed to understand our current program. We needed to assess where we are relative to the model program standards for the visual and performing arts program. And we are about recommending a multi-year plan realizing best practices. You have in front of you a data report that was put together by the committee. And since we met last Thursday, I wasn't able to get it in your packet, so I set it at your station. So you have a report of the data that we collected. As well, you have a chart of our recommended disbursement of funds, and there are extra copies at the back table for anyone here in the audience. Arts education and the recommended process from the California Department of Ed. That involved to develop an understanding of the key elements of the model visual and performing arts programs. As you can see on the display, there are 9 areas that we needed to consider. In analyzing how we stand relative to these key elements, we had to conduct a needs assessment. We had to interview site staff across the district. We gathered data on student enrollment, program information, current funding, and partnerships. And you have this sum total of our data collection in your packet. We also needed to determine where we're going relative to these key elements, because we really want to achieve the best practices level of achievement. You'll see a continuum in your packet on page 29 that basically shows the district profile. We're in the foundation stage. That's the beginning stage of this process. There's also a building stage and then a best practice stage. We look at an opportunity here to develop a program over time. We've also generated a multi-year plan centered around these key elements, and you have the beginnings of that in your document as well. We're in the process of developing that multi-year plan. We're not prepared tonight to share it with you, but you've got the draft of where the committee is relative to those key elements and how what we're looking forward to in terms of implementing a best practices program. We also talked about our strengths in the district relative to the visual and performing arts program. We are strong in our commitment to the arts, and that we have a policy, that you have a board policy that sets the tone relative to visual and performing arts. We're clear that that is a strength that we have in our district. We also have some obstacles, however. They're in the area of our collective attitude toward the arts, as well as do we have the time to deliver the visual and performing arts standards as core curriculum. The committee and the principals and the staff are grappling with these two big areas, to develop an attitude that commits to the arts as core and to deliver a standards-based program K-12. We have, you have included in your packet, a proposed disbursement of one-time money and ongoing money. In all the analysis of the data, the Visual and Performing Arts Committee targeted the K-6 program for initial support. There is a need for a sequential standards-based VAPA program at the elementary level. The committee has identified core standards in the K-12 program in music, visual arts, theater, and dance. And since we already are providing music specialists at the elementary level, really the focus was centered around how do we incorporate standards-based lessons identified in tandem with that standard, And we've also looked to other content areas in order to ensure that we have an embedded program that is complementing what we are already delivering now. You'll see on the chart that we have language arts standards, we have history social science standards that directly connect to the theater standards. It is our hope through the development of our standards-based lessons that we will be able to provide lessons that can be integrated into the core curriculum. It's a challenge, and we're just at the beginning stages of this project, but we see that with a solid with solid standards-based lessons that are integrated into other core curricular areas, that our classroom teachers will be more inclined to deliver these standards with the assistance, and that's where the money comes in, of having teaching artists or consultants working with them in terms of this delivery. Now, we wanted to ensure that all kids have access to the core curriculum. So that's why we've identified the essential standards at each grade level, and that's how we're building our program. We think the support from teaching artists who are consultants working with our staff in the delivery of these lessons will provide support and professional development for our teaching staff. It is the hope that our staff will be able to establish a foundation in their core curriculum in all classrooms across the district. Now, this is an ambitious goal that we have, but we do think and we do know that we have this commitment, and we intend to work it through with the support of the principals and of the K-6 staff. Now, we've spent quite a bit of time looking at that time element at the elementary level because of their already impacted schedules. That's why it's very critical that we're identifying core standards that are embedded in the big four content areas. All right. Another area of funding is looking at ongoing funds. Continuing with ongoing funds, we also are looking for support in curriculum development, committee support, so we can continue our visual and performing arts committee to include professional development in this process of developing a model program. Mentioned earlier was that the California Alliance have coaches that come to school districts to assist you with the plan. We're hoping that some of this ongoing money can help us in terms of developing out our plan. We're just at the beginning stages right now. You'll also see on the chart that we have a field study trip included for each secondary school band and choir, as we think that this is an opportunity that is integral to our course of studies at the secondary level, and we think there should be ongoing support as they develop their talents and their performance skills outside of our school district. If I may go on to another area of need, it has to do with because we feel that it's important that our bands and choirs have at least two opportunities within a year to be able to have the field study experience outside of our school district. Now, this means that we would be looking to the future through our strategic plan to hopefully address our instructional needs in this area through the strategic plan. We have one more funding source, and that is our instructional materials budget, which has identified the need for textbooks and instructional materials across the board in each of these areas. You can see from the chart that we are looking to, I'm sorry, Kim, go to the next slide.
That's the end. It's got to be this one.
All right. Excuse me. You have in your packet, the last page, is the instructional materials budget, and it reflects the materials necessary for our teachers to deliver their program. That is another funding source other than the two that are presented with state money. In summary, we'd like to begin our K-12 Visual and Performing Arts Plan. Through the efforts of the staff and our community partners, we've been able to establish an understanding of our current program with an eye on what a model district program looks like. It's our hope that the K-6 standards-based lessons embedded in our core curricular areas, providing staff development for our teachers as they are delivering their core objectives. It is our hope that we will be able to continue this instruction at a base level for the next few years. We think that the resources that are were proposed to support our teachers will begin the step to develop a model district program. We see this process to be an ongoing commitment, and we hope that by providing you an annual review of our progress, that you in turn will support our efforts. This is an initial recommendation. It's for this year. And as we look to the future, we hope that we can go deep and provide a quality program over the course of time. So we're here and available for comments or questions and appreciate your input.
Dr. Matakovich, I can't find where the instructional materials, the ongoing funds, is located in my packet.
Okay. You should have it in the handout, the last page in your handout. Sorry.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, correct.
I just wanted to make the point that the Morro Bay and San Luis High folks, and I think the consensus was that their program, many of their programs are on the best practices stage.
Okay.
I can't remember whether you mentioned that this evening or not. Yeah. They were very passionate about making sure everybody got that.
Yeah, thank you, Walter, for pointing that out. When we did the work with the continuum relative to best practices, what we had to do is summarize our rating
earlier, and I personally appreciate the time and effort and with everybody's contribution, because I think it is important and it shows a lot about what this district is about. But in moving the ship into dry dock from 5 miles out, where it's been for the last 30 years, I was wondering what the thoughts are regarding benchmarks or assessments for the schools as you go along 1 year, 2 year, 3 years, to where there may not be outside artists in residence coming in, but the integration will be, are you going to be able to have benchmarks set up? Will there be assessments done to see how the schools are doing in terms of the integration and the sequential application of this?
Yes, we discussed this at our meeting last Thursday, and it's a very important piece that you raised, because it's important to understand what your commitments are and what your expectations are and what you're shooting for. What our intention is to develop our standards-based lessons, to be able to have time with our teachers, with these teaching artists consultants. And those teaching artist consultants are going to need to go through an orientation process to ensure that we're all on the same page. It's very important to us that we meet the essential standards at each grade level. We'll then develop our benchmarks for our teachers and our expectations, just as we do for any curricular area. So this is an area that we have not developed out. It's a void that we have, so it's going to take us some time to put that in place.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. It says that you are looking for input to the staff, and I think everybody's pretty much in agreement that this is just a great job. Yeah. Okay. Let's move on then. We've had a request from Mr. Miller that we flip-flop items number 8 and 9. And if that's okay with the board, then we would go on to item number 9 first, is that right, Russell? Which is the 2007-2008 budget, the first reading of that. So let's see. That is Mr. Miller.
Thank you. And at this time, I'm going to hit upon some highlights of our proposed 2007-2008 budget, and then allow you to ask questions from the materials that you were given over the weekend. If you will if I could direct your attention to your board book, and I'm sorry, for your budget book, not your board book, but the budget book has the blue front page. I think about the third tab in is a budget summary. If you could go to the budget summary real quick. Good. What you have is you have two budgets presented to you. On the left-hand side, you have the budget as of April 30th, 2007. And then on the right, you have the 07-08 projected budget as presented tonight for the board. I want to hit on the highlights of those numbers. In terms of total revenue, we are projecting $65.9 million, with $52.8 million being with Kate, a 5% economic uncertainty of $3.3 million. We would reserve restricted program balances of about $1 million. We would reserve one-time monies of about $110,000. And then we would reserve lottery and other expenditures for future allocations, which include lottery mandated costs and the MAW. When you total up all of those different areas, you end up with an unappropriated reserve of about $500,000. That's our budget at the moment. And now I would like to direct your attention back to your board book. If you go to item 9 in your board book, and specifically page 9.2, the critical pieces of any budget, especially in school districts, is you operate in somewhat of a black hole of known information, because we're trying to put together a budget prior to the state giving us any information about what they're going to give us, and prior, in our particular case, to knowing what the assessed valuations that the county assessor is going to put upon property from which we derive the majority of our revenues. The revenue assumption that we're dealing with in this budget is that we will have a 5% increase in residential taxes. There are three aspects of residential taxes that we base our estimate on. One is assessed valuations, which come from exchange of property, i.e., you sell a used property to a new buyer, causing the valuation to go up. That is a huge amount of money for us. The second one is involved in the it's a supplemental tax derived from new construction and new developments. That's not quite as big, but it is still a sizable amount of money. And then there's the Prop 13 2% limitation increase in the valuation of property that people hold for year after year. We can look at those three numbers, and you can graph those, and you will see in previous years that the assessed valuation piece is going sky high. The supplemental taxes are rather upward yet steady increase, and, of course, the 2% increase is a very straight line of increases in property value. When your assessed valuation line quits peaking and starts flattening, you know you're going to be in for a year of reduced increases, not reduced, but reduced increases of revenues. We see that happening at this time. We do know that in the 07-08 year, our 5% estimate is rather a conservative estimate, and that the county auditor's office has said it's probably closer to 6 or 6.5%. I'm willing at this time, after the development of the budget, to exceed that is probably true. And so what I'm saying to you is that tonight there is another 1% increase in revenues available. That 1% increase amounts to about $400,000. It's actually $380,000. But for the purposes of round numbers, you figure $400,000. So in this budget that we looked at on
as health and welfare benefits budgeted to increase by 12%, I'm assuming the cost of those benefits that we're providing the employees are going to cost us 12% more.
Well, actually, our share of the whole increase is only 6%.
Okay.
Because We have a $5,000 cap and 50-50 of everything over five. So the 12% is divided equally amongst the employee and the district.
Okay, but it represents the increase in cost of the health benefits.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Since Mr. Millar interrupted you.
Yes, I was trying to. I noticed you grabbing.
Or that androgynous. The Prop 13 2% that's almost flat, is that because those properties are eventually sold and they go into the assessed status because they're out of that protection? Is that
they
what
would.
To them?
They would, indeed. But even after they're reassessed in their assessed valuation, they get the 2% each year after that, too, at the higher rate. So it's actually an add-on. But for those who hold their property for years and years and have pre-Prop 13 property, their maximum increase is 2% of that base of 1978. So it's not a whole lot of money. It's when it's sold that it benefits the school district tremendously, the county, too, for that matter. Now, just in the expenditure assumptions, statutory payroll costs are assigned according to law. We have a decrease in our workers' comp rates at 50 cents per hundred. It's gone down, attributable mostly to the change in the workers' comp laws, which control the medical costs much more stringently than they had in the past. In addition to that, we have a school site allocation for discretionary spending, as stated in the book. We are covering property and liability insurance at an actual cost. We know what that is. We are covering our utilities based upon current year adjustments. One of the things the district has done very well in the past couple of years is take advantage of certain flexibilities with water and electricity to keep our control of our costs. In particular, a well at Morro Bay that we now water the play fields with has been very, very beneficial in terms of costs. And we continue to look at options for that purpose. And you'll be hearing about some new options that we've come up with in the near future in response to Ms. Rogers' concern about Los Osos. And then lottery funds are budgeted as follows. Those are the basis of the assumptions, revenue, and expenditures. We have a very strong budget this year. We have very strong revenues again this year. They are not as they were in previous years in terms of increasing amounts. And the following budget year, 08-09, is even going to be more of a flat line increase, more in the line of 2, 3, 4% perhaps. Questions?
Let me just jump in front of you here, Mark. I had a question up on page 9-2 in the first section, and it relates to the projected allocation of secretary, clerk, library, media center, new yes. duty campus, and also the custodial staff, and how those allocations are going to be affected because of declining enrollment. And my question is, how well is that working? Is that a good way to plan for positions?
Yeah, it's an excellent way.
It just seems to me like custodial staff, there's a certain critical mass that you've got to achieve in order to have that process work efficiently and well. And if we're just driving that staffing by declining enrollment, that was my concern, is that we're not tweaking it for that recognition.
Fortunately, the formula also takes into account square footage and other aspects besides just declining enrollment. But declining enrollment being a part of the formula and it's dropping results in a dropping allocation, but not significant enough to really make the adjustment.
I have, if I can, thank you, sir. Thank you, Walter. As I was going through this, at the top of 9.2 in the agenda, other programs supported from unrestricted general funds include special education at $3.3 million. Is that the encroachment? Is that how much we're backfilling for?
It is.
Whew. Okay, Jackie, come cough up some. and then I guess the other question I had as I went through this was the allocation for school site copier charges, and then down below the lottery funding for district-wide copiers. Is that a duplication? Is it $400,000, or is the lottery pay for the for the school site allocations?
We utilized lottery funds to give the school site their allocation. It's not for, it's just the one time.
Okay.
Put in two different places.
Because that's a lot of paper.
Good catch. Thank you.
Thanks.
Russell, can you explain, I know we talked yesterday about it, but the fact that the cafeteria fund, which has always been a revenue generator for itself, is generating less and will in the future generate less. Could you explain for the benefit of the other board members?
On 9.5, at the top of the page, is cafeteria fund 13. And what it says is that the revenues from federal sources are $900,000, state $63,000, and we generate about $1 million from meals that we give. One of the aspects of the legislation that's been coming down about healthy foods from the state has resulted in rules that we can no longer sell soda and candy. Both of them were highly profitable, high volume items for the cafeteria to utilize. We are going to see for the first time in a long time, I don't know how long, but a long time, that the cafeteria fund will be operating at a deficit of $50,391. It does have a large reserve of $700,000, and it will be able to sustain that for a short period of time. But remember that it is a self-sustaining fund that pays for its own equipment. A walk-in freezer, which we just replaced at San Luis High School, could conceivably cost $250,000. And so anything can happen in terms, and we have a number of those throughout the district. The cafeteria fund has to be prepared and has to be healthy enough to handle that. We will be looking at those aspects over the summer.
What? The GASPE money, can you just kind of
good
give
question.
Us a short course?
Yeah, let me touch upon a couple aspects of GASPE 45 issue and Fund 20. The budget establishes a pay-as-you-go cost for employee benefits of $700,000, and we have that budgeted. Our actuarial study that establishes what our future liability will be calls out for us to contribute an additional $550,000 on an annual basis for 20 years to cover that future liability. So what we had done last year at the end of our fiscal year, we took some of our reserves and moved them to Fund 20 to start the funding of that future liability. We do have $1.5 million, a little less than that, in that fund. It is allocated for this future liability. Yet the nature of Fund 20 is that should we get into some sort of financial distress that would require it, we can dip into that money and bring it back to the general fund and be able to bridge through a turbulent period for ourselves and have some cash flow and some ready funding.
So the total amount we need is about $20 million in that fund?
11-something. It's 11-something.
Sorry.
Million.
Okay.
Yeah, and these funds million. That are being held in these reserve accounts, that I think it's important for folks to know that these are invested with the county in conservative yet beneficial ways. And
local agency investment fund, which has only the highest rated investment instruments available, bonds, et cetera. Mr. Speer?
Yeah, so no Orange County.
Oh, I'm sorry.
All set?
Yep.
I had a question about certificated salaries. We see there's an increase of about $500,000 year over year in certificated salaries. I'm looking in the big budget book, the summary.
Okay.
And my question is, I read somewhere, I don't know if it was actually in the board book, the budget, or one of the Friday packets, that we have, due to declining enrollment, we won't be replacing how many teachers this year? Is it eight?
Seven, I think.
Seven or eight.
Yeah.
So what I just really want to clarify for myself is, you know, those are senior teachers, so fully burdened, that probably represents roughly $1 million in salary. Is that correct?
It's an average salary of about $80,000, right. So it's $600,000.
Burdened with benefits and everything else, though, it would probably be. Yet we see our certificated salaries costs going up. I'm assuming that's because the overall population of certificated teachers are getting the raise this year. And
Okay.
Yeah, teachers represent, just call for round numbers, $25 million worth of salaries. If you place a 4% increase on that, you're looking at $1 million. And then with the benefits increases and then losing of the positions.
And step and column is one and a half.
I just wanted to raise that because I've heard it brought up before, and it's easy to leap to the conclusion that teachers are retiring because of declining enrollment, and there's going to be this pool of money that can go somewhere else. But when you take all of that into consideration, that isn't necessarily the case.
It's not necessarily self-balancing, but it does mitigate the cost of salary increases and step and column and benefits increases.
Russell, I noticed also in the large budget book that the
revenues always equal expenditures, so it's a zero-sum game with categorical programs. That's why you see what you see there with the difference between federal revenues of $3 million versus $2.5 million current to next year. We simply haven't budgeted everything yet.
Does that also apply to the entitlements under the special education monies and also the NCLB monies?
No, special ed's a little bit different because it has a component of COLA and growth attached to it. However, we are in a position that half of our special ed money comes from the feds and half of it comes from the state. The state has put a COLA on theirs. The feds have not put a COLA on theirs. So you get what they call this bifurcated COLA, which is, in effect, instead of getting 4.whatever% of COLA, we're only getting 2.whatever of COLA because half the money has it, half the money doesn't. Once again, it's an example of special ed being not only underfunded, but, we'll just say it's underfunded.
And that's why the encroachment occurs?
Exactly.
I'm just curious, if I look at the big budget book again and I go to special education on page number 2, our total legal costs in 2004-2005 were about $181,000, and we're budgeting about $500,000 for legal costs for the next year. We're looking at some pretty tremendous increases there, and I'd like to know if kind of where we're going with this, and if we can think it'll continue to increase. I would point out that currently we've spent about $576,000 in legal fees. And I've got to say that's really disturbing to me.
Well, it's a huge disturbing trend throughout the state, throughout the nation. And as you've made an observation in about 2 or 3 meetings ago, there is a trend of litigation with unbridled awards of not only just damages but also litigation fees. And there is a groundswell of opinion that states we should try and limit the amount of awards for legal fees if we can possibly do that. The problem is it's federal legislation, and the only government entity that's been able to pass that is the Washington, D.C., the District of Columbia, because it's a federally governed area. States don't necessarily have that right to limit that. What we have done in our budget is prepared for the worst and allocated on the basis of the last 3 years of history from countywide experience of litigation. We're fortunate in that our district has per capita the least amount of litigation for a district that's had litigation. There are some small districts that haven't had any litigation, but there are a lot of potential expenditures for litigation coming at us in the next couple of years. It's very similar to what was going on with workers' comp and with what was going on with malpractice that took a long time for the state to.
We've had authorizations. It was basically to welcome in a population that had been marginalized into public schools, fully into integrated, free and appropriate with everyone else. But the ironic thing to me is that over time, some of these individuals have decided that the public education system isn't really that great, and they would like to go back to a private situation that's separate, paid for at public expense. So it's just kind of ironic to me. Instead of, you know, here we are in public schools and we're all going to do it together now. I don't know. It's just a trend. Dr. Valentine's humming. You want to comment on that or better not? That's a dangerous thing to comment on, but it's kind of odd, really, when you think about it.
I think the issue that I think runs up litigation costs is the obligation of the public school system, an appropriate obligation, to provide a free and appropriate public education to students with disabilities. The lack of a clear definition of what a free and appropriate public education is leaves the school district and certainly the clients that we serve constantly attempting to resolve the issue of what that free and appropriate public education is, and as a result, it gets driven into the courts and the dollars get driven into the hands of attorneys.
Is that a motion?
Is there any more discussion on item number 9?
Just absent any more discussion, I would like to invite the board to consider approving the budget tonight, if you're comfortable doing that. If you're not, we bring it back on the 20th. Theoretically, our budget is approved and due to the county office on January 15th. But
January 15th? Or
I'm sorry?
Did you say January 15th?
Did I? June 15th. Thank you.
I move approval of item number 9.
Thank you.
I second.
It's been moved by me and seconded by Mr. Spadafore. Any other discussion?
I just want to make sure what we're approving for item number 9.
The proposed budget allocation, item number 9.
Okay. And so are we now going to go back to the tiers?
To the strategic planning.
Okay. Okay, good.
Okay. And then I would also just like to thank Kathy Hunter, who assisted greatly Russell Miller in preparing this voluminous document so well. Thank you.
Yes, and thank you, Kathy. Thanks for all that hard work every year burning that midnight oil. Is there any other discussion on item number 9? Okay. This is just a standard vote, isn't it? All in favor of the 2007-2008 proposed budget adoption, say aye, please.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 7-0. Let's go back then to item number 8, strategic planning, approval of superintendent's revised 2007-2008 budget recommendations, and this is our fifth reading. Dr. Valentine.
And that's what I would share is that this is the fifth reading. I'll note the only change between this reading and several of the prior readings is that we've moved a proposal to take over autism services, further kinds of commitments of ongoing dollars would be something I think we would recommend holding off on until we see what kind of revenues appear. We are also coming forward and have from the beginning that there would be sufficient one-time monies to fund the one-time recommendation also associated with the strategic plan. And again, if the board reaches a comfort level tonight to reach a decision on the strategic plan budget, certainly the opportunity to approve it is there. There are some advantages to approving the budget now and that we can get down the road on personnel decisions and hiring and recruiting. However, if the board is not at a comfort level, we'll certainly bring it back later in June.
I just want to clarify, when you say that it's probably okay for us to do the one-time monies too, are you talking about the entire list, the $933,000? Okay. Well, I'll move approval of Tier 1 for the 07-08 budget and the one-time monies listed on page 8.3 of this item.
Okay, it's been moved by Mr. Millar and seconded by Mr. Buckman. Mr. Peter.
Just point of clarification. Russell, earlier you talked about an additional $400,000. Would that potentially cover Tier 2?
No, it covers Tier 1.
Oh, that was specifically was Tier 1. Okay.
For the purposes of process here, what you got in your budget approval was a balanced budget, okay? It did not include Tier 1, 2, 3, or the one time. What you're doing now is you're telling staff, you take the budget we just approved and make adjustments to it for these amount of monies.
And we can do that because the budget we just adopted had some assumptions that turned out to be a little more conservative than they needed to be.
It's going to have some improvements to it.
And we may still yet see some additional revenue improvements, but the highest level of confidence that you feel we can act on
at this moment in time. And if we see additional revenues come forth from county or other areas, we would bring it to you and bring with us a recommendation about level two or additional one-time monies or whatever the case may be.
Does this budget, the summary we looked at a few moments ago, include sort of the windfalls that we've been fortunate to get, the sale of the property, the Clearwire stuff, things like that? Is that already in the revenue equation?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
And just a question for me, and I think we've talked about this before, is the $175,000 one-time for Pacheco. I would like to know how things continue on Pacheco, recognizing that we didn't get that grant this last time, and what steps that we'll need to take to make sure that Pacheco School is adequately funded. So I'd like to, as that develops, I'd like to know about that and other things that the board can do to encourage Pacheco funding. Okay, so it's been moved and seconded. Do we have any other discussion? Okay, all in favor? Aye. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said you didn't pick up your microphone there.
I'm sorry. I just said
we take that vote back because we did not completely allow discussion.
And tier one from our famous chart here with all the principals and site councils and everything, but you wanted to put it up in tier one. Okay. Well.
Just one more comment.
I'm not quite done yet either. And I had another question on, even though, I know I've brought up computers before, is it possible, instead, if you don't want to fund 100 computers, to somehow figure out how to add computers for the Morro Bay High School Ag program? As I don't know how much that would cost, but since we had someone speak on that twice, I mean, do we have to do all or nothing on things like that, or can you put that,
the question of being able to tease out a particular individual interest being funded in the strategic plan is certainly something the board could do. I'm not sure I would recommend it because were it known that speaking to the board would elevate your priority, I don't think we'd get out of our meeting.
And the other thing is, on something like special ed training, $43,000, I mean, that's determined already, and it's, I'm just curious on some of the figures, exactly how, we just have to, that's what they are, period, right?
Yeah, there was background that led to that amount, some of which we'll talk about tonight.
Okay. All right, those were my questions. Thank you.
I didn't think I had a question, but I do. And it has to do with the Pacheco funding. They were not able to obtain the grant funding this year, but will they be making application for next year, or is that dried up as a source?
I think it's unknown. It is dried up as a source, and I think we have to proceed without the assumption of those dollars.
So then, Dr. Valentine, could you come back to us at some point in time after this budget cycle with an idea of how we might make an ongoing commitment to Pacheco in our base budget?
Yeah, and I think the answer to that is actually a fairly straightforward one, and that is that We kept Pacheco out of Tier 1 this year because of the uncertainty of the grant, and we thought that we might be able to bridge two or three years with grant money if it became available. but we protected ourselves against the eventuality that the grant either would not be successful or, as turned out, wouldn't even be funded for anybody by funding it in one-time dollars. If you project the same scenario to next year's strategic plan, it would simply be a matter of prioritizing Pacheco very, very high in the recommendation for new ongoing money. And had we this year not had any speculation about the grant, I think you'd see $175,000 of Tier 1 figure that was pulled from thin air. And
they're already set in concrete. That's my question.
They're not set in concrete, but they are recommended.
Okay. Is that it? We have a motion on the table. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 7-0. Let's move on to...
Late aye.
I'm assuming. Let's move on to item number 10, board self-evaluation preparation. Dr. Valentine.
The board requested an opportunity to conduct a self-evaluation at our July 17th meeting, I believe. A couple of things. The board wanted an opportunity to be able to plan for that and provide input to that. Some of the tasks, which the board asked an opportunity to take on would be, one, brainstorming topics for the self-evaluation session, and two, as we mentioned earlier, some discussion or resolution of the question of whether a moderator would be sought or not.
Mr. Spatafor, did you have some discussion items that you wanted to talk to us about?
I had emailed everyone with some ideas just to maybe start the discussion points. Did everybody get those? So that was just something to share with the board, and then we can go from there.
Okay. Do you want to let us? Can you read those out for us real quick?
Yeah. There were three things that I had listed. One was board relationship with district shareholders, i.e., students, parents, teachers, classified employees. What is it? What could it be? What would benefit the students? The second was governmental interaction, local, state, and federal. What can we influence? What should we try to influence? And the third was public relations within our community. Can we do more? Will it benefit the school community? And do we have important information to share?
Okay. Mr. Millar and then Mr. Buckner.
Well, the idea came up regarding facilitator or whatever term you want to use. I think the board has some governance issues that we need to confront and deal with. Being a shy Southern boy, I think it would be helpful if we had somebody to help us guide us through this process, because I think it can sometimes be difficult to really take a critical look at ourselves and how we're performing as a board and as individual board members. So I think I've sort of revisited the idea and think that we would benefit from having a facilitator. I don't have a specific facilitator in mind, and I will confess that last year I didn't finish my homework assignment for the facilitator that we had. So I'm feeling bad about that.
We can't bring her back.
Actually, we are bringing her back. We got the ruler out. Mr. Buckman?
Sorry. Let me see. I was going to talk about something else, but I need to agree with Walter.
We were too worried about some aspect, or I shouldn't say we were too worried about it. I think we misapprehended some aspects of the Brown Act. In fact, Carolyn Botwin really pushed to get us briefed on the Brown Act and opened a lot of people's eyes. You know, we need to respect it, we need to follow the law and the spirit of the law, but at the same time we need to understand it well enough so it's not inhibiting our effectiveness as a board member and not disrupting our attempts to communicate with each other and the public about things we have to decide.
Yeah, and that I think that might not be a bad idea. I don't know if we'll have time during the board self-evaluation. I think in light of
particular events that have happened in other school districts in the county, a review of the Brown Act might not be such a bad idea.
Mr. Unger? Our district at least goes to the school board conference every year, unlike other districts, where we learn those things. That's an excellent conference. I wanted to second the questions or the way Mr. Spadafore framed some ideas to discuss, and I would like to have these, whoever facilitates the meeting, use those. I don't know if we actually were clear on whether we want to use those or not, but I think we should.
And perhaps Dr. Valentine, you and at least to get started, you and Mr. Spadafore and I can review some of the things that we, some of the things that we talked about last year, the guidelines that we used. I think we took some of those from CSBA, if I'm not mistaken, and maybe we can look at that and then bring that back to the board and see if those are things that we still, that are still germane to items that we would want to discuss relevant to the governance issues that that we might need to explore. Okay, is that agreeable? Okay. Dr. Valentine, will you remind us that we should do that? Perfect, thank you. Other discussion on item number 10? I think Russell should not be the moderator. It would be a heck of a short meeting if it was. Okay. Let's move on then to the action consent agenda.
Before we move on, there's one word in the English language that holds back progress of mankind, and the word is meetings.
Okay. Item number 11, approval of certified and classified personnel items. Number 12, approval of agreement with California School Employees Association, chapter number 89. 13, approval of extension of contract with SEIU, Service Employees International Union. 14, approval of K-8 social science and 7-8 science instructional materials. 15, acceptance of donations. 16, disposition of surplus property. 17, approval.
Sorry,
15. 15? 16, approval of surplus property. 17, approval of purchase orders. 18, approval of warrants and payroll. 19, approval of waiver of California high school exit exam requirement for students with disability. I'd like items 20 and 21 pulled, and item number 22, approval of summer field study trips.
Move approval of items 11, 12.
Mr. Millar, sorry, Mr. Peter. All in favor? Okay. And I just wanted to point out that both items number 20 and item number 21 refer to professional learning communities. One is serving children of Los Osos, and the other is C.L. Smith applying for a grant from being sponsored by Orange County Department of Education. It also speaks to professional learning communities. And I think this goes to the issue of collaboration, which we'll be talking about. And I would like to know more about perhaps this. I don't know if it's appropriate to talk about it here in the advanced agenda items, but as we move forward on this, I'd like to continue to receive information about professional learning communities and collaboration within our schools. And I'm glad to see that these two schools are moving forward on that. So I would move approval of items number 20 and 21.
Second.
And any other discussion? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Carry 7-0. Item number 24, advanced agenda. Is there anybody that would like to add anything to the advanced agenda at this point?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, Mrs. Dickinson.
I was very interested in reading the administrative regulation regarding supplementary instructional materials, and I was wondering if the number 4 about informing the principal or designee that materials will be used is really practical and fits the, I don't know, kind of the more, how would I say it, free and loose expectation that teachers will be professionals that was in our budget policy, I mean our board policy. And I would just like to discuss that as an agenda item.
Is there any support to discuss that as an agenda item?
I actually had a question about it, though. I mean, I read it the same way because we did adopt a board policy a couple of meetings ago that I thought put the discretion with the teachers to make decisions about supplemental materials, and I thought this was incompatible with our board policy as well. So okay. I would support having a discussion about that.
Okay, that's two people, that's all it takes. So, okay. Anything else? All right. Let's move on then to item number 25, reports by board members and district administrators. Okay. And I just wanted to say that the reason I missed the meeting the last time was that I was fortunate enough to be able to go up to the School Boards Association Delegate Assembly and also to participate in their Legislative Action Conference. And then also I was participating in the Tri-Counties Education Coalition Legislative Day. I know that I've sent you all information on it, and I was able to send it to all the board members in our area. But California School Board Association, and I don't know the status of these bills right now, supported a bill for the alternative to high school exit exam for those who didn't pass, and some sense that we would at least explore alternatives to that and then to require those schools who are in certain program improvement positions to implement their plan and pay for it themselves. And CSBA was in strong opposition to that. We think it's another backdoor way of looking at mayoral takeovers of schools, and then also to continue to support the Fix NCLB campaign. And so we're ahead of the curve on that, and thanks to Mr. Buckman that we went forward to push that as a board resolution. So thank you, Mr. Buckman. And that's it. Mr. Buckman.
Our illustrious chair is being a little bit modest. While he was up in Sacramento, he was also elected president of the Tri-County Education Coalition, which is a over 20-year-old organization.
Okay. Anybody else for item number 25? Okay. Yes, Dr. Matakovich, I'm sorry.
Please, I need to schedule, or we need to schedule an expulsion hearing, and I have the clipboard if you pass it through. It's up. Thank you very much.
Okay. Item number 26. As I've explained, I will not be able to participate in this discussion. I am an employed by the County Office of Education. In discussions with our attorneys, there is a sense that there could be a construed conflict of interest, because essentially what we're doing here is modifying a contract that we have for services with the County Office of Education. And so at this point, I will be abstaining from this, and I will be leaving the meeting. So thanks, and I will see you all later. And I turn the meeting over to Mr. Spadafor. And
we'll miss your input.
Good luck.
Will somebody please escort him out of the building? thanks. And then I think Dr. Valentine, are you going to lead us with this?
I will.
This item, thanks.
See you, Chris.
We provided the board tonight a couple of things. First of all, we've separated from the Tier 1 proposal and the one-time monies proposal a recommended course of action with respect to autism services within district classes in San Luis Coastal. The short version of it, and there's more extended background on rationale, but is that we are providing, we currently receive autism services for students in district classes via a payment and a vendor arrangement with the County Office of Education. We are proposing to run that program ourselves and not contract or not pay for those services through the County Office of Education. The County Office of Education has informed us that they will not Office of Education. We believe that there are advantages to beginning to recruit the personnel who would provide these autism services sooner rather than later, because as the county withdraws these services, everybody will be looking for ways to provide those services themselves, and we would like to get a jump on that. And third, I think the generalized philosophy that we have supported through staff recommendation is that there are advantages to having greater direct and immediate program control, which reduces challenges to programs, and we believe will have a mitigating effect upon litigation costs within the school district. Ironically, Mr. Unger expressed an interest in getting some financial background or some fiscal information related to this proposal. I'm sorry that Mr. Unger can't be here to receive it, but we do want to honor our commitment and share that, and Mr. Miller will be doing that at this time.
In the analysis of the cost models that, one, we currently operate under, and two, we're discussing operating under in the 08-09 school year, I want to point out a caveat, and it's on the front page of the handout you got, and that is that the following calculations represent just a snapshot in time. They are completely dependent upon the number of students served within our district and all other San Luis Obispo County schools. The construct of the current model we operate under is one of delivering excess cost chargebacks to school districts based upon usage. So if our usage declines, the cost is divided amongst fewer students to other school districts, and you can see how the model will fluctuate depending on the number of students. One student in or out of the program could have an effect upon the calculations. So having said that, it's just the nature of our special ed program that we grapple with in trying to estimate costs. But be that as it may, the San Luis contribution to the base funding for autism, the county has an agreement whereby they base fund $250,000 for basic services in autism. That amount was established some 7 or 8 years ago and represents the growth. Today's number versus those days' number represents the growth of autism within our county as a special needs situation for school districts. So our share of the $250,000 based upon our CBEDs is $53,075. The San Luis Coastal School District share of the autism excess cost is 50% CBEDs. We represent 7,400 enrolled kids to a total of 35,000 within the whole county. Our share is $119,568. And our usage on an hourly basis is representative of a $78,500 cost. Our total excess costs is $198,000. Our total contribution for autism is $251,000. There will almost certainly, not assuredly, but certainly be a new model of calculating costs. And this whole idea of excess costs goes away, and we will have a restaurant menu of programs to choose from at established costs. So it'll be a different model. It won't be an excess cost model. It'll be a model of choice. It'll have flexibility built into it. We'll receive our $4 million of special ed funding directly. We can spend that money on those items we feel is important. But we must participate in our current agreement for one more year, and that's why this cost model that we're talking about this year is a 1 year only. 07-08, base funding, $53,000 remains the same. The CBEDS piece, $119,000, remains the same. But we do get to reduce our usage, because if you guys will honor our request, we will be able to deliver direct services to our own kids. There's 19 of them. we'll be able to deliver 8 of those directly. So our usage will decline to 11/19. There's 19 kids. We'll be using 11 of them in the county, 45,000. So usage goes down. It's now 165,000. We anticipate a program specialist cost of 86,000. We will have a contract with Autism Partnerships to deliver training and monitoring and oversight of our autism program at a cost of $25,000. The key to that $25,000 is within this agreement we currently are operating, the SELPA will provide us a 50% rebate or return of that money equal to $12,500. If we get the transition subsidy of $50,000, it leaves us about $15,000 short. Where we will get that money is from the $43,000 that you just approved in the budget for Tier 1 program professional development special ed. $43,000 was the amount that you gave. We'll transfer $15,000 into this program for professional development, and we will then cover the entire cost of the $251,000. That's the basis of our request. That's the basis and philosophy behind the idea of delivering the program ourselves. As Dr. Valentine says, 3 essential reasons we get to deliver our own program. It becomes defensible in a certain degree. We get a head start on the transition that's going to happen. And I forgot the 3rd reason.
We can provide the services.
We provide the services ourselves. Okay, I got them. We've been going over this so much, it gets to be second nature. But the bottom line is that's our proposal. The other pages that you see in your handout were designed to allow Mr. Hugger to ask questions about the financial model. And I would only, well, I'm not going to take up any more time. You can read these, and I think there's interesting correlations to be drawn about the percentage of usages and the dollar amounts per student that different districts spend.
Yeah, I was just reading.
If you want to ask questions.
Doing the percentage is pretty amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
I've got one if I can jump in there, John. First of all, quickly, why are we only going to be able to service 8 out of the 19? The recruiting environment's going to get more competitive. How likely or possible is it that when the first day of school arrives and we don't have all the components of the program that we need in place to serve the autism students that we want to serve directly?
Specifically the program specialist position?
I wouldn't want to say specifically because okay. I don't think I understand the delivery model well enough to know, but the key, can we get the key components, the key personnel in place and time to do this given the increasingly competitive environment?
We are at your approval ready to be able to fly the program specialist position. It is something that is known throughout the county that different districts are positioning themselves for this. And I feel very confident that we will be able to deliver this program defensively and with adequate staff. We have eligibility pools through personnel currently and have established a what-if budget and side of the personnel recruiting process.
And Russell, your caveat about what happens, it's the students who need the services that can really affect the total costs of things. And Jackie, I guess this is in your area too. Are we seeing the growth in autism such that we could end up 1 year with a tremendous increase in the number of students we need to serve? And if so, what would be the implications for our program at that point?
We could see an increase in the number of students we serve. I don't think it would be tremendous. I think that autism is a special need category that has some growth to it. But in terms of dramatic growth, I don't think that's going to be our issue. I think truly building a program that has the components in place that allows you to transition to more kids. And what we have to remember is autism is a delivery of services within a program. And so the program is an SDC class, a special day class. What? Go ahead, tell them. I think I'm getting a little deep in here.
Out of his element. programmatically, it is a service, regardless of where the student is in the classroom or in a preschool class, in a high school class, mainstreamed, or in a day class. So it is a service that follows the student. Your question about what will we see an increase in, and what does that look like? Regardless of the service delivery model, if there is the need to serve the student, we need to serve the student, regardless of the model. And for us to be able to build, us meaning the district, to build capacity, to build efficiency so that we can have the trainings district-wide and not bifurcated, would give it a smooth streamline for when students transition from 2.5 years old to 3 years old. We'll be very able to provide those services right away, and there wouldn't be any lapse in the service. Needs for occupational therapy, that would still remain as a DIS service through the County Office of Education, and that would be part of the excess costs or the new model. We're not looking to change the DIS services at all. What we are looking to do is provide the services of the behavioral service component, the SCIAs, the Special Circumstance Instructional Assistant or Paraeducator, provide them with intensive methodology, mm-hmm. research-based methodology, provide the services to them, the training to them, then they'll provide it to the students, and then also somebody to be able to oversee and help design and develop this individual program for that student, which is the program specialist.
So it might be some additional aides and definitely training for aides and classroom teachers? No.
Classroom teachers is part of the special education strategic plan, and mm-hmm. autism is a component of that special right. education strategic okay. plan as well.
Dr. Valentin?
Yeah, I just want to point out that Russell's caveat at the beginning, that he took a snapshot in time. He basically showed what the current usage and current student levels were and what it would cost to provide exactly that service if we went to the proposal that we're talking about, and that's where we are. The caveat says those things can change depending upon the shift in students and the shift in the intensity of the students who come. What doesn't change, however, and I think adds some consistency to the proposal, is the fact that if there were increased costs that occurred, those increased costs would accrue on the county side if we stayed with the county, and the relative position of the district's expenses would stay the same. If you're following what I'm saying, that the relative position of the district's costs would stay the same because county costs would rise dramatically if there were some dramatic increase as well. So we're still arguing that there are advantages to providing our own services, to getting a jump on recruiting personnel, and that controlling our own programs is an advantage.
Mr. Millar?
I move approval of the transition of autism services for 2007-2008 and the $50,000 one-time cost.
I'll second.
We have a second by Mr. Peter on the motion by Mr. Millar. Are there any other questions or comments? Ms. Dickinson?
Just to clarify, that autism is a spectrum, and some students with autism don't need certain services and some do, just so we all are aware of that. They're very... Good for you, Mr. Miller. Okay.
With that comment and the motion and the second, are there any other comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The motion passed 6-0.
The only thing I want to follow up with, and thank you very much.
We
would take care of that. But this conversation is going to become embedded in your meetings for a long time to come. And the aspect of what a special ed program, special ed services, spectrum of services, all of those components need to be understood by this board. And I think it's very important that you ask these questions and then we develop for you a common sense layman's approach to what it looks like should we have to go in this direction, because change is coming, and change is coming after.